Welcome to the R7 Christian Marketing Podcast, sponsored by Emma's Good.
R7 is an innovative, God-inspiring process that explores personal and professional purpose. R7 analyzes seven strategies to transform your vision and find direction in your organizational marketing. R7 establishes clarity and guidance for the gift we call life. This is my destiny.
Welcome to the R7 podcast. Got a special guest tonight. Tonight for her, she's joining us from Barcelona, Spain, Barbara Carnero. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Oh my gosh, this is going to be so cool. You are a communication and brand strategist, a Christian communication brand strategist with a couple of decades of experience.
Yeah, that's right.
You have a really awesome world view of places. Why don't you share with us where you've lived in your life? This is so cool.
Yeah, well, right now we're living in Spain. This is my seventh country. I think city number 16 or 17. We lost count. So, yeah, a little bit of everywhere. I haven't gotten to Africa and Asia yet. So we'll end up there somehow.
And is that on the list, do you think?
I hope so. At least Asia for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So is this kind of like a vision for your life of like how you want to like live your life, or is it more work related? Like what makes you move?
No, definitely. Yeah. Definitely wanted to run, you know, just get to know the world. I feel like it's such an adventure. But at the same time, you know, I like the touristy stuff, but I really love just getting to know real life there, like with the locals, trying to understand how different cultures and languages. And so I just love to pack my bags and move every 5 years or so. Yeah.
That's so cool. On the podcast, we talk about R7 a lot, Barbara, and R7 is the destiny, the vision, the strategy, the brand, the communication, pray, step seven, take action. And I think this is really cool because this is one of the first podcasts where I've really been on with somebody who's experienced and an expert in understanding messaging and the pain points that it takes to get to the tip of the spear.
Yeah.
And so I'm really excited to talk to you in terms of, you know, the branding and the communication and kind of what you've discovered over the years with certain clients, good and bad. Let's start there. Mm-hmm. Lots of questions, but let's start there. And like, how do you attack this, I don't know, problem or like this deliverable of understanding messaging, but also with this platform of, you know, I want to glorify the Lord with my talents and my abilities. Like, so I'll just open the floor to you.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, it's been 20 years. And so you can count on a lot of mistakes that you kind of accumulate of trying things. And, you know, the trial and error can give you that benefit that we now, you know, looking back, I'm like, oh, I went through that. Now I understand how this thing can work in a certain way. And so I feel like the accumulation of mistakes or things that didn't quite work is what then builds what I'm currently working on today. Mm-hmm. Over the years, we have seen, you know, working with churches, working with nonprofit organizations, with Christian-minded organizations, we have seen one thing that it's everywhere I look, I can see it, which is the people I'm talking to, they all know there's something good inside of what they're trying to do. Like they all know there's something amazing. They've seen it. They've had a feeling about this thing. Like they can even live it out. But then there's a moment where it becomes really hard to express it to others or to express it consistently or to have the next person express it like them. So it becomes this very insulated message, right? So it becomes this thing that they know is good. They know other people need to hear. They know others will follow if they could hear that message, but they don't know how to express it. And so it's across the board. There's not a single person that I've talked to in the past where I couldn't see that glow in the eye where you know there's something special about what they're doing. You just know it. But, you know, coming from the outside, you're also trying to read in. You're like, okay, well, let me see it. Let me show me what it is. Because even though you may have similar missions with another church or another organization, there has to be something that is so unique about you because you've seen it. And so I can tell you that in many ways, God has worked in my cynicism. Because every time it always happens. Yeah, even when it feels like, oh, this one may not have anything special, you know, it's just another fill in the blank. And eventually here it comes. You start asking questions, you start digging a little bit deeper, and there's that beautiful movement, God designed something that somebody caught that vision, and you know, they're trying to build it.
Yeah. So that's awesome. That is so cool. So I get that, like, there's like this inherent ability to do good. Where do you start?
Yeah. So I think everything needs to start with awareness. And so the best way for us to be aware of where we are, you have to, you know, it's like if you're building a pool in your backyard, you have to assess the landscape first. You have to look at what kind of, you know, space you have, what kind of ground you have. Like, there needs to be an initial assessment. And so that type of assessment is what will give you the starting point. So we have to have awareness of where we are. What is that story? What is the DNA? How did we get here? What are the milestones? What got us started? What got us going? What kept us going? Like, there's so many little things that you can only pay attention to if you put those cards on the table. And so we would start always with discovery. I would never go into creating any messaging, any graphics, anything visual, anything really, without first sitting down and asking questions. I find it fascinating that there's a book out there, and I could get the number wrong in this one, but I think it's something like the 187 questions that Jesus asked and the three that he answered. So he has this method, and I could, the number could be wrong, but I know it was a lot. So it's interesting to see that when he walked on earth, he spent more time asking questions than answering them. And so I wonder what that means for us as brands, as churches, as organizations. Like, do we spend enough time asking ourselves questions? Do we spend enough time getting that mirror, you know, facing us? And I can tell you, even as an individual, have you ever caught yourself maybe saying, you know, asking your son a question or your daughter a question or a friend a question? You're like, ooh, that question was for me. So it turns to us, to a place of saying, where am I today? How did I get here? What drove me here? What kept me going? And once we start answering those questions, you're going to find yourself, I think, facing the reality that it's so like day to day that we don't pay attention to it until we're like, wait a minute. Yeah, this is who we are, you know?
Okay, so I basically will give you the discovery. I'll be as transparent, honest with you as possible. I'll open up. I'll answer all Barbara's questions. Like, this will be amazing. What's the pain point over the years that you always run into that, like, this is going to be a hurdle here? You know, I'm going to ask it, but I'm not going to get an answer that's like, because it hurts. So I just kind of want to pick your brain there in terms of what is the pain point of that particular moment, where, because I kind of look at it like, you know, you can do anything you want, you can't do everything you want.
Absolutely.
And so we're talking about glorifying the Lord with our talents and our abilities. I see this lane that is really not wide. I mean, it is narrow, and it's got guardrails on it.
100%. Yes.
And so it comes to this point where it's like, all right, you know, what is that pain point for you? What do you see?
Yeah. So I think it's twofold. One is, what do you want to be known for? Because, and these two questions, I will ask them, what are you known for right now? What's the story currently being told? Like, if you're not in the room, what are people saying about you? What are you known for? And then I'll ask you at a later meeting, what do you want to be known for? If someone were to tell your story 5 years down the road, what would you want them to say if you're not in the room? And this forces you to narrow it down. it just forces you to think, because you're not going to say, oh, we're known for this and for this and for this. Like, mm-hmm. it just naturally forces you to think of that one thing. Because if someone is talking about you, they're generally not listing a bunch of stuff. They're generally yeah. referring to that one thing that really stands out to them, or that, well, you know, like there's something that is the either the entry point that gets them to connect with you, or the thing that makes them stay, right? So we need to figure out what that is. And then you have the ability to now define what is that story in the future, because they could be telling a story now that is not complete, or that is not accurate, or maybe it's not even where you're going. You may be pivoting, you may be changing, and you want that next version of your story to be different, that next message to be different. And so that's one. The second one is really, who are we serving? This one is the one that always gets people at the edge of their seats, or way back, right? You know, thinking deeply, because eventually your brand will be for somebody that you can serve well today, but it will most likely also not be for somebody. And so one of the questions that we ask is, you know, in the case of a church, for example, who's your church not for? It sounds very aggressive to ask this question. And then it's not because you're naturally creating an obstacle for them to come or attend. It's because you're simply not designed to serve them. You don't have the ability, the capability. You don't have maybe the resources, the people, the volunteers. When you think of brands, you may simply not attract them. That's it. They're just not attracted to you as a brand. You may not be able to serve the specific needs that they have. And so to get organizations to narrow down both what they want to be known for and also who they can serve really well, where there's the least amount of friction, it's normally the hard part. That's definitely the hard part. Yeah.
Okay. So this is fun. Great. I love it. I love those questions. Years ago, we were doing some marketing for a church, and this Pastor Jones, I'm Dave Jones, but this is Pastor Jones. He has a small church in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And he came to me and he said, Dave, I want to be more multicultural. We have all these Black folk in our gym, in our church. Like, yeah. I want to be more multicultural. I need some white faces. And I said, okay. So I said, let me come down and look at the church. And so I went down. Yeah. The whole church is purple.
Hmm.
Like the seats, the walls, everything. It just, yeah. And I was like, what is purple to you? And he says, royalty. Yeah. And I said, well, for white people, it's like, it's what Black people like. It's a Black person color. Yeah. And so you got to paint the walls, man. Like, you got to get this more like less, you know, purple. And he did. They spent all this money, changed it.
Yeah.
Still no white people showed up.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, Dave, I get that I kind of wanted this to happen, but who I am is a Black pastor, and those Black people, like, they just resonate with me.
Yeah.
Is that wrong?
Yeah.
This is who we are. I guess I just need to serve this community well, because we're just not attracting this other demographic. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I love that you're mentioning color, because perception of color based on it most of the time it comes in contrast with our own skin color. And so there is a different perspective, a different perception that people with darker skin colors will have, because purple looks different on their skin than it looks in our skin, right? And so it's simply perception. It's all it is. It's like how you contrast colors. Psychology of color is extremely powerful. And so you also have that key point, which is understanding how they perceive color and how they perceive color in contrast. Mm-hmm. Now, the other interesting thing that you're saying that for me is fascinating is pastors, leaders, brands will naturally attract a certain group without a lot of resistance. Right. And so you can actually attract different groups if you want to. There would just be a different level of resistance, a different gap, a different space between the two. And we have to understand what those gaps are. I believe there's about 9 communication gaps between us and our audiences. And so we have to understand first what that gap is. Sometimes it's a timing gap. Sometimes it's a language gap. Sometimes it's an educational gap, an awareness, a visibility. So there's different gaps that will bring a group faster than another. And if we're not aware of that distance between the two, Generally, it's gonna feel a lot like this spaghetti throwing, like, oh, let me try this and see if it works, right? Mm. And so there's nothing wrong with naturally attracting a group. In fact, that's something fascinating that we need to understand, because that means there's less resistance. You have a smaller gap with them. There's another age gap, for example. People will naturally resonate with leaders that are 10 years younger, 10 years older than they are. And so it's a lot easier for me to follow a leader, to respond to a leader, even if brands, if you think of the brands that you buy, if there's any association with the leader of that brand, generally you're going to find that there's a 10-year above and below gap that makes it easier for them to connect with that brand than the other generations. And so I feel the best way I can explain this to you is, like, if you think of those walkways, you know, like in the airports, they have them, like you have these, you know, movable walkways. I can't remember what they're called. They're, you know, so you can go faster, right? So you have to imagine that there's, I don't know, 10 of them coming towards you. They're all coming at a certain pace. Most of them are coming slow. And mm-hmm. you have the ability to accelerate one of those. Which one would you accelerate? Which one has the easiest path in? Now, can you accelerate two of them? Yes, but that means you're spending twice the resource, twice the time, twice the effort. And can it be done? Yeah, if you have the resources for that, yes. But generally speaking, you will most likely you get more momentum if you spend time in one of those, get traction, and then move on to the next. Because there's already a group of people naturally inclined or magnetized towards you. We just need to know who they are. Yeah.
That's awesome. So nine, let's go back to do you know the nine gaps?
Huh? Let's see if I can say them all by heart.
Okay, let's do it.
So you have visibility, awareness, you have timing, language, value, credibility.
Is age one?
It's not, no.
Okay.
The age would generally consider that more towards the audience. Yeah, I'm missing three. By heart, I can't remember.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot with that. It's so fascinating to me because it's so spot on. I mean, it's so good. Yeah. These gaps that and I love the walkway belt. Like that's a really cool visual.
Mm-hmm. And so awesome. if you think of the example you just gave me, it could be that I don't think it's a language gap in that case. It could simply be there's one that has to do with, does it apply to me personally? Is it something that it's relatable to me? And that's most likely the one that would apply in this case. They just don't know how it fits in their life. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's awesome to know that what level of resistance are we going to, right? And what time frame are we going to allow this resistance to happen before we... I always say there's two tenets of a human being. It's the pursuit of pleasure and the avoidance of pain.
That's true.
So now we have, like, you know, this resistance of this pursuit of pleasure, the avoidance of pain. And what is my resistance tolerance within those two gaps?
Yeah.
I would say most people's, it's just not a very good tolerance level. Like, it's, you know, the path of least resistance is where I'm going to go, which brings me back to the communication of what I was designed to be on this planet, and this road really narrow. And Barbara, I hear what you're saying, but like, I don't want to make that change.
Yeah.
What do you do with that?
Okay. So it's interesting that you mentioned the word change, because I feel like I've been such a pursuer of change. And I believe the church should be the catalyst of change. Like, we Christians should be the catalyst of change, period. Like, we can, out of everybody in the world, we have access to the Holy Spirit that can guide us and teach us and speak to us. And so to be in a place where we can initiate change, we have that advantage. We have a God that speaks to us. Like, how much more amazing could that be if I'm getting... insights, not just from my experience, but from the experience of others, but also from God himself, you know? So I believe that we need to be catalysts of change. Now, when you face a leader that is either unwilling to change or maybe resistant, Again, it goes back to awareness. We have to look at where we are. This is always the starting point. We should never push somebody towards a behavior, but we need to look at the belief. And so one of the things we do actually when we go through a process of branding an organization is I need to introduce the concept of anybody that will connect with your brand. We're not trying to get them to behave a certain way or to act a certain way. We're trying to get them to believe something new. And so they believe something. If I can touch on that belief and I can say, okay, this is what this person is currently believing. This is a lie that they're currently believing. What is the truth that I can replace this with? Then the behavior will follow. And so that kind of conversation applies to the leaders I'm speaking to as well, right? And so I need to touch on what is their current belief about something and then move them to a new version of it. These are actually two questions that we ask. And it comes from a combination of four questions. So I want to capture the very essence of the organization. And there's four questions that I believe will get me there. Now, the whole discovery process will give me a solidified version of what their movement is. I believe every organization has a movement in them. The whole discovery will get me a solid confirmation of what the movement is. But these four questions are generally where I can, like, you know, really dig super deep. So what are you committed to doing? What do you refuse to do? What is the greatest lie that you silence, and what is the greatest truth you want people to believe? When you capture these four questions, you're basically showing to them they have a movement inside of them. Yeah, they have a movement. There's something that they believe so deeply that is capable of saying to somebody, you believe a lie, and this is the truth I want you to believe. I don't care if you're selling Kindles on Etsy. You have a movement. You have a movement. It doesn't matter if it's a product, if it's a service, if it's a donation that you're looking for, if you're a nonprofit, you have a movement. There's something that you're initiating. And so once we go through these questions, here's what I'm also showing them, the brand, right? The organization. I'm showing you have a movement inside of you. This movement has to go and outlive you. It needs to exist beyond yourself. It needs to go fast. It needs to be portable. Others need to say, I want to join this movement of blank, blank, blank. And so the minute we capture what that movement is, it immediately gives them that grounding spot that says, ooh, this is what we stand for. And here's the cool thing. I can give you, for example, we have... I could bring so many examples. I love to get to the movement down to two words every time we go through an organization. So I can give you an example of one. One is restoring belonging. That is their movement. That's it. That's what they stand for. Nowadays, today, they do that by having church on Sundays. Mm-hmm. In 10 years, they could be restoring belonging, doing something else.
Yeah.
And so the minute that you show that the movement goes beyond the activity, the program, the product, the service, the whatever they're doing right now, it grounds them. Because now everybody knows, okay, this is what we're currently trying to exude to the world, right? So if that's true, then we all can go in the same. We can look at things and say, is this restoring belonging? Is this program restoring belonging? Is this idea restoring belonging? Is this partnership? Right?
And Barbara, so do you find it easier if you get to the restoring belonging, whatever these two words are, that it's easier for them to change?
I think so, because this basically becomes it, right? Yeah. So this becomes like that grounding expression, the grounding like foundation, but then the expression can be anything. And so it allows me to ground myself, like I'm holding on to something that is true, but then I can express it in different ways. And so it gives the freedom to change, the freedom to express differently. And some people will be like, oh, we're not going to be on social media. But what if we're on social media restoring belonging? Now I'm giving them a new frame to allow themselves to see a tool as a tool to execute on what they already are doing instead of resisting to something because they don't don't know how to use it. Does that make sense? So yeah, you're giving them tools now with a new lens. And so I want them to go out to the world. I have another one that is, her mission is to reveal joy. So that is it. Like, that's what she does, reveals joy. And if that's true for her, she does trips for female entrepreneurs. If that's true for her, then how would she do the things that she does? How would that frame the decisions she makes? How would she do social media instead of behaving like any other influencer, because that's what everybody does? Mm-hmm. What if she were to just reveal joy in social media? What if her ads were different than the other ads? Yeah.
This is so good. If you're listening to this podcast, you need to hire Barbara.
We're ready. We're available.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Okay, so we were talking about pain points, and yeah, I think you kind of answered the question. I mean, you're basically building a vision. You called it mission, right?
Yeah.
Where it's open. It's open for interpretation of how you deliver that. You're not stuck in a technology of this is how you're doing it before.
Exactly.
Which allows for freedom and allows for creativity and like collaboration, I think, versus... I heard this the other day, and I think it's just so powerful. It's one of our accounts, Oikios. And he said, you know, when you feel like there's only one way out and the walls are really small, that's Satan tricking you.
Wow.
Because in God's economy, there are no walls. There's infinite opportunities, right? It's the abundance of life.
Yeah.
And so like this idea of I'm stuck, I'm isolated, I have nowhere to go, I only have one choice. This is a lie. Mm. And yeah, I think it goes back to your awareness, Barbara, of saying like, okay, I need to be aware of my situation.
Yes.
Like if you're aware and you're mindful of that awareness, then you can work from that. But if you have this fixed mindset of like, okay, this is the way it is, and this is just how, this is where I was born, this is where, you know, like it doesn't work. And I think this plays into your DNA of like you exploring the world, like it's infinite abundant opportunity.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I find it interesting that you're using these expressions, because when we think of any expression of any brand, God has taken me back to the basics of communication. Like, what are the basics? And so on one side, you have the personality of the brand. So think of this as two individuals talking to each other, like people, right? So back to psychology. So you have on one side, the personality of the brand. And one of the things we try to capture is what is the archetype? What is that personality of the brand? There are about 12 archetypes that have been identified in many different ways. Like, you will see them in movies, you will see them in literature. And so they've been defined in psychology, and we have applied them to the work that we do. So there's 12 archetypes. And so when you think of a leader or a teacher or, you know, an idealist or a partner or a friend, these are all representations that are emotional representations of brands. So, and then on the other side, you have the worldview and the emotional mapping of the people engaging with you. Okay. So the audience, so what marketers call the audience that you're trying to reach. Right now we have four generations that are alive making decisions. Yeah. So you have the Gen X, well, baby boomers first, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Zs. These are the four active generations currently making decisions. And they come with a specific emotional map. They come with a worldview. They come with, because the way the world was when they were children, that's what defines their sense of worth and how they behave and believe today, how they communicate, right? And so you now have 12 archetypes. You have four generations that are alive, and you have these nine communication gaps that I mentioned to you. Mm-hmm. What's fascinating about each brand is that one brand will basically fall in one of these possible combinations. What is my archetype? What's my main generation that I'm speaking to, where there's the least resistance? And then what is the main communication gap that I have between me and them? I had the chance to calculate, and there's about 432 possible options when you combine these. And so Imagine if a brand could walk. You were talking about having walls or no walls. There's 432 yeah. possible. 432 possible walks that you can take. And so imagine if, and you could just be hitting the wrong, maybe you're just hitting the wrong generation. Maybe you're just hitting the wrong gap, or maybe you're just not in alignment with your archetype. Like if these three can be positioned, I can guarantee that the path is going to look so clear that the sense of feeling stuck will disappear. And this is guaranteed. I've seen it over and over and over, because what we're doing is basically, and this is the most beautiful part, it's not designing and creating something new. It's uncovering what's there, because God has already created it. The business already exists in a certain way. The organization is already designed in a certain way. Intrinsically, many brands will actually work in accordance with where they need to go, but they're doing it intuitively. It's not there. There's no science behind it. It's like, this just feels right. And so imagine if you can now put a label to it and you can redirect and you can say, hold on a minute. We are the catalyst archetype. Our brand exists for the sake of hope. That's the key human desire that drives people to us. And we're mainly speaking to Gen X. Our leader is 47, and we're naturally attracting Gen X's. And the gap that we have between us and them is an awareness gap. Listen, you don't need to do much. It will help you design your communication, your newsletter, your social media, your marketing, your website, your decisions. It just will make sense. So there's 432 routes at least that you can take.
It's almost like it's choice overload in terms of where do I go? So then you feel stuck. Is that right? Is that accurate?
What happens is that we're circling kind of blindly. Yeah. So that's what happens often. It's like I'm trying to find, it's like somebody just gave you this lock and you're rolling the numbers to see how the combination.
Yeah.
And so all of this rolling of the numbers is the guessing game that most people spend.
It's an alphanumeric code.
Years. Like, you spend years trying to crack it. And so I this is why I'm saying go back to basics. And I can tell you something from deep in my heart. None of this is me sitting down studying books. It was God putting in my mind. Like it was downloads of just sitting around and being like, whoa, hold on a minute. That makes sense. And this idea that just came out of nowhere, and you know it's him inspiring you. And so I can't even take the credit for it, because I believe that God was just revealing these pieces that eventually then made sense. And so it goes so deep back to basics, because you have personality of the brand, you have the personality of the person on the other side, and the space between the two. That's it. It's the most basic communication framework ever.
So let me just recap to what you said, because this was really cool. So you have the personality of the brand, you have the personality of who you're trying to reach, and then you have the gap.
Yep.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. I try to make it, you know, nowadays with AI, it's like, okay, give me an easy to remember word. And so it came up with ARC. So it's the archetype. It's the first one, which is the personality of the brand. You do, like, as a brand, it doesn't matter what your brand is. You're always, people will relate to you emotionally. And so you relate to them as a personality. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you think of Apple, it's the visionary. If you think of Lego, it's the visionary. If you think of Jeep, it's the explorer. If you think of, they all have different personalities, right? And so when I think of A in ARC is the archetype. When I think of R is the reality of my audience. And again, this is just because it's easy to remember.
Yeah.
So what is the reality of my audience? I'm going to go back to the generations and see, okay, what is characteristic of this generation? And then I'm going to go down to their emotional map. What drives them? What are their moods? What are their hindrances, their obstacles? Like that's the emotional mapping of those individuals. And then the C is the chasm. So archetype, reality, chasm. And that's the combination of the three.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So this feels like it's more of how I communicate what my purpose is. Like, how do I figure out that communication type, right?
Yeah.
Which is a step down the path for me when I think about, okay, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, Yeah. Gallup says that 88% of the U.S. economy is disengaged in work. Only 1% of the global economy trusts management. I think it's less than 10% of the U.S. trust.
Yeah.
I think about the idea of like we go to school, get good grades, get a job, learn a skill. We're getting paid for that skill. But in the world's economy, we're not being fulfilled through that skill. So we just change jobs, change jobs, change jobs.
Mm.
Whereas God's economy is I have a purpose. I have a passion. I want to feel some level of self-actualization. Therefore, I will feel fulfilled in my purpose. And so I've kind of narrowed it down into like, as a Christian, we want to glorify the Lord with our talents and our abilities. And I think that's nice, but also feels like obligatory religious phraseology, which means what? Nobody knows. That's why it's obligatory. And so, yeah, so I get that idea. All right, sorry, I want to glorify the Lord with my talents, my abilities. What are my talents and my abilities? How do I find the tip of the spear in my messaging?
Yeah.
Me personally. Yeah. Let's say you, Barbara.
Yeah. So it that's an interesting question because I find it that, again, as individuals, we also have a mini movement, I guess, inside of us like that. That idea of a purpose is nothing more than this movement that I'm describing.
Okay.
And so my goal as an individual, as a professional, is to reveal that heartbeat. Like, what is the heartbeat that I can see in you as a person? And then what is the heartbeat that I can see in people? And it's funny how it's not very different. Generally, brands are expressions of our own personal movements, mini movements, or put it that way. So I believe vision is given to people that will then build these brands as expressions of that vision that was given. And so funny enough, when it comes to talents and gifts, I find it fascinating because I can tell you, like, there's some things that I just know how to do because I believe God has just, like, inspiration, that's it, done deal. And there are other things that are not so much so, like you have to really work towards it. And it's that callus, it's the doing it over and over and over that gets you to that moment where you realize, man, I've been doing this for a while. I can see things in a different way, or I can, you know, I know this is what this will work or this will not work simply because I've done it so many times. And so it's a combination of both. I think God will inspire people and give out talents like that, like gifts like that, and he will develop those talents over time. I also believe it's never too late to receive a gift from God. And now you're able to do something new. And, you know, it's, and it's, for me, it's fascinating to see that happen even in my own life, to know that, well, I couldn't do that last year. And now I find myself with the courage to try it, or, you know, somehow it became easier than it used to be. I've heard story after story of people that couldn't write well and now they're writing books, you know, so God type inspiration, I think it's very real for us as believers. And, let's not discard that. Like, he can inspire you in you new things that you didn't even think were possible. So or sometimes, let me use this word better, I wonder if it's an awakening of something that he's already given you in the past, it just hasn't been awakened or exposed.
That's good. Okay, so I get that I have this purpose and this passion, right? And I truly want to, like, if there's not somebody like you or me in their life, where's the first place for them to begin on this vision journey? What do you think?
That's such a good question. That is a good question. So I maybe go back to my own experience because that's what I can recount.
Yeah.
But for me, it was just a lot of time talking to God himself. I'm like, okay, God, like, well, you know, where do I go? What is, you know, because there are periods of either confusion or you're not really sure. Is this really what I'm supposed to do? I think very few people have this clear vision and they just go at it.
Yeah. It hasn't been my experience. I don't
know. Yeah. So either you have a clear vision and you don't go at it, or you don't have a clear vision. You're definitely not sure what to do. So I believe most of us are going through this very long process of, and you know, I don't know if you've been through this. I have. Give me a sign if this is what you want me to do. And you've gotten 20 signs already just this week, right? But there's always just like, oh, no, that sounds a little, I'm not really sure. And I can tell you, I've had I'm actually going through a similar process right now where I know that I know that I know that I know confirmation after confirmation, both from God and from people around me, that I should be doing some things for my company. I've always been hiding, like always like getting clients, you know, on social media and creating stuff for them. And I've always been the one like hiding, and everybody keeps saying the opposite. No, you gotta. So I finally gained the courage to start a YouTube channel.
Okay.
And, but tell you what, this is a 5-year, 10-year struggle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's not a 5-day struggle. It's a 5-10 year struggle where mm-hmm. I've given God all the excuses. And so I believe this is a very solitary place. I think we're all kind of just, you know, oof, is this really what I'm supposed to do? How do I go about it? Because we feel not equipped. And so I would love for those that are, they're listening to this right now. And if that's that, there's that little spark, there's something that either, you know, clearly God has given you, or you're kind of like wondering if it's like, don't fear talking to God about it. Like openly, he's so ready. He's so willing. He so wants you to go and ask questions and even doubt with him. I wish I had done more of that at the beginning. I wish I would just like wrestle with those questions more at the beginning. But the second one was, I had so many people say the same things I knew God was telling me, but somehow the courage wasn't there, you know? Mm. So yeah, it's a lonely place. I think we choose to not follow those, those moments as fast as we could, you know? But if there's one thing, so going back to your question, because I did not forget, if there's one thing I would say, where's the place to start? You know what makes a huge difference in ideas, thoughts, any of that? It's to write them down. Yeah. You don't have to write much down. You can actually record a voice message. But the minute you see those words, the minute you either hear yourself say those words or the minute you write them down on a piece of paper, they become more real. Mm-hmm. And so face that reality, look at it from an angle. Like, what would it mean for you to write down, I am going to be a leader of X, Y, and Z. I am going to pursue this particular passion. What would it look like for you to see it written down? The power of words, the power of the words we choose to use is incredible. And so I would actually encourage you to just sit down and write them down. Like what words come to mind? Maybe it's just those word clouds that we used to see a few years ago. Like what words come to mind? Write them down, see them, look at them. Awareness is always the best.
Yeah. So what you're saying is actually scriptural. So Habakkuk 2:2. This is interesting because Habakkuk was a minor prophet, and he was really upset with God of what was happening. And the image I like to talk about here is, this is when Nineveh was like mm-hmm. New York and Los Angeles in the 70s. Like it was this place where anything went. The rape, the stealing, anything went in Nineveh, and nobody wanted to go to Nineveh. And so Habakkuk gets up on this watchtower and he sits there and he says, all right, Lord, I don't know where you're at or what the heck's going on, but I'm going to sit here on this watchtower and I'm just going to wait. Yeah. And God responds with, write the vision on a tablet and make it plain. And in the Amplified, it says, so a runner running by can see it and carry it with them. And so what I kind of translate that into, Barbara, is, you know, if we're driving down the road at 60 miles per hour, I guess it's 100 kilometers for you, whatever. you're driving down the road and you see this billboard, and the billboard says, in America, it says McDonald's next exit, you know, and you go, okay, I'm hungry. I want to get off. Right. And so it's easy for you to get off like this exit and know what you're going to get to. So it's not a billboard with 30 words on it. You know, it's something exactly what you're saying. It's something that's like, okay, this is kind of what I want to do. Yeah. I don't know if this is the right, but at least it's a launching off point.
Yeah.
I also like this answer too. If you're listening to this, you're struggling, I don't know where to go. Right. And you've been this Christian that's been going to church or not going to church or reading your Bible. The question I like to ask is, what is the future you're fighting for?
Yeah.
If you're really honest with that question of whatever that is, your family, your career, you know, maybe it's something of like for me, it was something like, I just didn't like who I was.
Yeah.
Like I was aware of, I don't like, I came out of a pro hockey career where I was like, I wouldn't be friends with me. Mm-hmm. Like I had the awareness of like, I don't like me. I would never be friends with me. And I just happened to bump into a guy that says, you know, he became my mentor and said, you know what, if you don't like who you are, read these books.
Mm.
And it became this journey.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it's okay to admit and be mindful of where you are and be aware of that, because the more truthful you are with that, the better. I don't know if you found that with your clients, like
100%.
If the more truthful they are, the easier it is to work with. If they're masking this stuff, you have to work through the mask, right?
100%. It's funny. We actually do ask that question. What are you fighting for or against? And it's interesting to hear the answers to those questions, because sometimes we don't realize how it can actually be summed up. There's just something that you say, you know what? Somebody needs to do something about this, whatever that this is, right? If you look at your life as an individual, at anything that you're building, there is most likely something you're fighting for or against.
Yes.
There's definitely something there. And so what is at the essence of what drives your motivation? What drives your day-to-day? What is it? It's already in there.
Yeah, and I think the second tier realization of that is, why am I fighting for that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, why am I dying on this hill?
Why is there so
high on this hill? Yeah. You know, I think that's great awareness, great mindfulness of like, why do I care so much? I really don't care about this.
Yeah.
You know, I want to commit to my family. I want to commit to excellence. I want to commit to dedication. You know, I want to commit to integrity. I don't like myself because I lack integrity.
Yeah.
Right. And so I want to fight for that more.
100%. Yeah.
Is there anything in your mind as we sort of power down the podcast today that you think is a pain point to struggle through that other people could hear on this podcast today and say, you know what, we haven't really, from your perspective, like we haven't really talked about this. I wish we would have talked about this.
I'm just putting myself in the, you know, perspective of Barbara 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I honestly regret walking solo for so long, not reaching out for mentors or think
that's so good.
Wow. There's power in both. There's power in mentoring someone, and there's power in being mentored by someone. And so one of the things that I've learned is to always be mentoring and always be mentored. It's basically discipleship, just a different way of saying it, but it can apply in any area of your life. And so in business, in relationships, I learn so much from sitting on the shoulders of those that have come before me, but then at the same time, allow somebody to sit on my shoulders and observe and learn. So in that teaching, in those teaching moments, there's so much that you end up either learning or reinforcing because you have to, you know, show and tell and teach. But that's one thing I regret, having walked solo for so long. Instead of just reaching out and asking for help and also offering to help others.
Let me ask you this as a follow-up question on this. Okay. This is really good. Cause I think this leading, I'm actually writing a book and it's coming out in June. And I think your answer is going to lead into why did you not, you said for 10 years, I wish I didn't go solo. What holds you back from not being, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to frame the question, right? Something was holding you back from being mentored. What was that?
I think the nature, there's two parts to it. One was, I just thought I can do it all by myself.
Yeah.
But a second part to that is, I don't think I believed people would be willing. I think there's this huge belief of like, who would want to invest their time without anything in exchange? Or, you know, I'd never believed in helping for helping. I didn't see it as an option. I just believed the world was designed differently and everybody was out to get you and there was no helpers. You know what I mean? A bit of context there. I didn't come to faith until I was deep in my business already. So I've been an agency owner for 20. I came to faith about 13 years ago.
Okay.
And so, you know, I was in the business world before I knew Christ in my life. And so there's this, you just believe in the corporate way of existing where everybody's out to get you and you can't really trust anybody. And so that was my default. And it wasn't until I start seeing things differently that I believe that there are people out there actually willing to just mentor, to just disciple, to just help, to just walk alongside. And I'm not even saying it has to be free. You don't have to pay that. I'm suggesting the opposite, that there are people willing to share their knowledge, to pass down to you what they've experienced, whether paid or free. That's not the question here.
So I
wish I had started sooner asking for help or reaching, you know, like pursuing help instead of just thinking I have to run solo.
So I've studied this idea of development and glorifying him with our talents, abilities, just as much as you have. You probably have more experience in it than me, but I've kind of boiled it down into four different areas that inhibit us from not pursuing our purpose and passion.
Okay.
And those four areas are fear versus faith, right? Which you talked about earlier. As Christians, we should have more faith because we have Christ. We have the written word of God.
Yeah.
So fear, lust. So lust is sometimes looked at as sexual lust, and it could be. But I'm looking at lust for like possessions, power through people, not through Christ. So I'm going to do this because I want a faster car. I'm going to do this because I want a bigger house. You know, those lust for possessions. Anger holds us back. And here's the big one. The Bible talks about this a lot, is pride. So I call it your flap. Your flap is holding you back.
I love it.
And so I know there's other culprits to it, but these are the big ones. You know, if we're really playing a game of like glorifying the Lord, there's a game that the adversary is playing to inhibit you. And I think 100%. Having the awareness of that, you know, being okay, Satan, you're going to get me with lustful, you know, I'm a dude and like, you know, whatever, like you're not going to work. I'm married, happy, you know, 25 years, like I'm not going to fall for that, you know? And so just identifying it. You know, or my fear, you know, I'm fearful in this. Okay, I'm fearful. What's the Bible say about being fearful? You know, and just identifying the fear and recognizing it and identifying it and putting it in front of you, you know, which maybe if we, you know, explored a little further why you didn't, maybe it was the pride. Maybe it was like, you know, I can do it myself and I can't depend on these other people. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. No doubt whatsoever. And then the fear. Sure.
And then the fear.
That. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think of that? Fear, lust, anger, pride?
Definitely those two that you mentioned. So for me, it was the sense of I'm just going to do it by myself. This like, you know, the go do it. But at the same time, the fear was definitely consuming. I can totally go back specific episodes of my life and I can, you know, pinpoint. Moments where I can definitely see it about, I'm trying to calculate the time now. This was about 3 years ago, maybe three years ago. I did a conference for church communicators and the verse that God kept circling over and over and over, was this idea that, you know, I did not give you a spirit of fear, but a sound mind. And so I had for that conference, I had sound mind written everywhere. Like the bags for the conference said, he said a sound mind. And then the bracelet had, he said a sound mind. Like it was so, because and it was funny because some people were like, what does this mean? I was like, no, he said a sound mind, not a spirit of fear. And I was like, oh, okay. It makes sense. So I mean, I literally plastered it everywhere because I remember being a huge fear that I was facing by creating my own conference and then inviting people and doing things differently. And like all of that, that whole thing was one of those moments where like, I just have to cross this river and trust that it's going to go well, or it's going to go, I don't know, maybe it's not going to go well, but it will go well anyways, you know? So, and that was the first that kind of kept me going.
Really identified it. That's awesome. That's so good. Well, listen, you've been such a gracious guest today and so transparent, just sharing a wealth of information. I really love these gaps that you talked about. I really want to explore that further. So thank you for that. I'll give you the last word on, you know, kind of next steps for those that are listening and watching and you know, moving forward as they work towards glorifying the Lord with their talents and abilities. What say you, Barbara?
What was the question specifically?
The question is, if somebody is chasing their purpose and their passion, you know, what are some, you know, take home steps that you would suggest? We already talked about it kind of on the podcast, but just kind of summarizing as the last word.
Sounds good. Well, again, start with those four questions, understanding deeply what do you commit to do, what do you refuse to do, what is the greatest lie that you silence, and what is the greatest truth you want them to believe? Because this forces you to look at both yourself and also the audience. So understand those two pieces. For me, it's important to always think two ways, both internally who we are, but then on the other hand, who's on the other side of me. So if you focus on those four questions, it's going to be a great starting point of their awareness that we're talking about.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Barbara, for being a guest on the R7 podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Join us again next week as we continue to uncover the secrets to success with faith-based testimonies and the power of R7. Remember, destiny awaits, but time does not.